Part 2. Offensive Operations. Commanders use offensive operations to defeat and destroy enemy forces, as well as to seize terrain, resources, and population centers. Part 2 consists of 5 chapters that describe the fundamentals of the offense and the 4 types of offensive operations: movement to contact, attack, exploitation, and pursuit. Chapter 3. The Offense. Offensive actions are combat operations conducted to defeat and destroy forces and seize terrain, resources, and population centers. They impose the commander's will on the enemy. The basics discussed in this chapter apply to the conduct of all types of offensive operations. Purposes of the offense. The offense is the decisive form of war. The offense is the ultimate means commanders have of imposing their will on enemy forces. The main purposes of the offense are to defeat enemy forces, destroy enemy forces, and gain control of terrain, resources, and population centers. Additionally, units conduct the offense to secure decisive terrain, deprive the enemy of resources, gain information, fix an enemy force in position, disrupt an enemy force's attack, set the conditions for successful future operations. Characteristics of the offense. Successful offenses share these characteristics: audacity, concentration, surprise, tempo. See ADP 3-90 for more information on the purposes and characteristics of the offense. Note, Chapter 3 of the print version of FM 3-90 illustrates some of the common control measures used during offensive operations. The illustrations are not compatible with the audiobook format. Additionally, Appendix A defines and discusses common offensive control measures used to synchronize the effects of combat power. Units use the minimum control measures required to complete their missions, while providing subordinates the flexibility needed to respond to changes in the situation while preventing fratricide. Types of offensive operations. The types of offensive operations describe the general sequence of the offense and recommended formations. The purpose of the operation discriminates one from another. The 4 types of offensive operations are movement to contact, attack, exploitation, pursuit. Note, attack does not have a planning symbol. Unless a commander deems it is necessary to constrain their subordinates, the default type of offensive operation is an attack, and graphic control measures such as an axis of advance or direction of attack can be used to convey the commander's intent. Additionally, exploitations and pursuits are generally a branch or sequel to a successful attack. Movement to contact. Movement to contact is a type of offensive operation designed to establish or regain contact to develop the situation. It creates favorable conditions for subsequent tactical actions. Units conduct a movement to contact when the enemy situation is vague or not specific enough to conduct an attack. Forces conducting a movement to contact seek to make contact using the smallest friendly force feasible. If friendly forces make contact with an enemy, they have 5 options: attack, defend, bypass, delay, or withdraw. There are 2 variations of movement to contact: search and attack, cordon and search. Refer to Chapter 4 for more information on movement to contact. Attack. An attack is a type of offensive operation that defeats enemy forces, seizes terrain, or secures terrain. Attacks incorporate coordinated maneuver. An attack differs from a movement to contact since knowledge of the enemy's disposition enables units to synchronize and employ combat power more effectively. There are 4 variations of an attack: ambush, counterattack, raid, spoiling attacks. Refer to Chapter 5 for more information on attack. Exploitation. An exploitation is a type of offensive operation following a successful attack to disorganize the enemy in depth. Exploitation seek to disintegrate enemy forces to the extent that they have no alternative but surrender or retreat. Exploitations take advantage of tactical opportunities. Division and higher echelon headquarters normally plan exploitations as branches or sequels to current operations. See Chapter 6 for more information on exploitation. Pursuit. A pursuit is a type of offensive operation to catch or cut off a disorganized hostile force attempting to escape with the aim of destroying it. Pursuits entail rapid movement and decentralized control. Pursuits require the pursuing force to retain more mobility than the enemy force. Any offensive operation can transition into a pursuit if enemy resistance breaks down and enemy forces flee. Pursuits generally follow successful exploitations with the purpose of completing the destruction of enemy forces before they can reorganize. There are two variations of pursuits: frontal, combination. Refer to Chapter 7 for more information on pursuit. Common offensive planning considerations. The widespread application of highly accurate and lethal weapons, the high degree of tactical mobility, ever-present sensors, and a complex operational environment all characterize contemporary combined arms warfare. Units have a higher probability of tactical success when they can first visualize the battlefield, understand the implications of existing friendly and enemy dispositions, and take effective action to impose their will on the situation. The planning considerations for the offense also apply to the defense with situationally appropriate modifications. Only a determined offense, conducted at a high tempo and to great depth, attains the enemy force's destruction. The attacker's principal advantage is that it possesses the initiative. Maintaining the initiative allows units to engage the enemy at the time and in a manner of their choosing. Attacking units have the time and opportunity to develop a plan and to concentrate the effects of subordinate forces and combat enablers to create conditions for success. Units strike the enemy in unexpected ways at unexpected times and places. They focus on attacking the right combination of targets, not necessarily the biggest or the closest. These attacks are rapidly and violently executed, unpredictable, and seek to disorient enemy forces. Attacking units maintain tempo by rapidly following up on attacks throughout the depth of the battlefield to keep enemy forces off balance and deny them the ability to recover. Friendly forces develop flexible plans that allow them to take advantage of opportunities to maintain the initiative and dictate the tempo of operations against the enemy. Due to the intensity and high pace of offensive operations, units take proactive measures to prevent early culmination prior to accomplishing their assigned mission. The tempo of friendly operations must be fast enough to prevent effective counteraction, and attacking units change their means and methods before enemy forces can adapt to them. Line-of-sight overlays help protect the force by identifying intervisibility lines where units cannot make visual and direct fire contact. An enemy force will have difficulty engaging friendly forces with direct fire weapons without line of sight. Situation templates also help protect the force. If units know how fast an enemy force can respond to their actions, they can sequence operations so they occur at times and places where an enemy force cannot respond effectively. Units calculate enemy response times by determining enemy artillery range fans, movement times between enemy reserve assembly area locations and advancing friendly forces, and other related intelligence items. Command and control warfighting function. Synchronizing the six warfighting functions through planning and preparation increases a unit's effectiveness when executing operations. However, the fluid nature of combat requires leaders to orchestrate the actions of subordinates during the execution phase. Leaders determine where they can best affect the flow of operations and influence critical events by redirecting the effects of committed forces, changing priorities of support, or employing echelon reserves. This redirection normally means that units are well forward in the echelon's formation, usually with the force designated to conduct the main effort or at a location where a key decision or task must be accomplished to enable the success of the main effort. Examples of key tasks or decisions can include the execution of a forward passage of lines or a wet gap crossing. Once the unit conducting the main effort makes contact with the enemy, friendly forces quickly move to where they best can assess the situation and direct the continuation of offensive operations. At battalion and above, units anticipate requirements to shift the main effort during an offense to press the battle and keep enemy forces off balance. They develop decision points to support these changes using both human and technical means to validate decision points. In addition to assigning objectives and identifying decision points, leaders at all echelons consider how to exploit advantages that arise during operations and the seizure of intermediate and final objectives. Leaders exploit success by aggressively executing the plan, taking advantage of subordinate initiative, and employing trained units capable of rapidly executing standard drills. The echelon reserve also provides a flexible capability to exploit unforeseen advantages. Units maintain communications and comprehensive throughput of information among all units throughout the offense. They plan how to position and reposition command and control systems to help control operations. Units plan how to expand the communications coverage to accommodate increased distances and enemy efforts to deny friendly communication systems as the unit advances. Units provide for redundant communication means. A unit maintains its common operating picture throughout an operation. For a common operating picture to aid a unit in maintaining situational awareness, the unit requires timely and frequent updates of relevant information. All echelons report information on the disposition and activities of friendly and enemy forces. A well-trained unit with rehearsed standard operating procedures, augmented with digital systems, enjoys reduced engagement times and an enhanced planning process. This enhances its ability to control the tempo of the battle and stay ahead of the enemy's decision cycle. Greatly improved knowledge of enemy and friendly situations facilitates the employment of fires and maneuver at extended ranges. Such knowledge also enhances friendly forces' freedom to move to those battlefield locations that best enable their ability to influence the battle or engagement at the critical time and place. Movement and maneuver warfighting function. Attacking units maneuver to avoid enemy strengths and to seek positions of relative advantage that they can exploit to accomplish their mission. They seek to overwhelm enemy forces with one or more unexpected attacks before enemy forces have time to react in an organized fashion. Echelon security forces prevent an enemy force from discovering friendly dispositions, capabilities, and intentions, or from interfering with the preparations for the attack. Finally, units maneuver to close with and destroy enemy forces by close combat and shock effect. Close combat is warfare carried out on land in a direct firefight, supported by direct and indirect fires and other assets, ADP-30. Close combat encompasses all actions that place friendly forces in immediate contact with enemy forces, where units use direct fire and movement in combination to defeat or destroy enemy forces or to seize and retain ground. The forward movement of subordinate units is critical to the unit maintaining the initiative necessary for successful offensive actions. By maintaining a high tempo, units deny enemy forces a chance to plan, prepare, and execute an effective response to friendly offensive actions. This is a key way to ensure the survivability of the force. Techniques for maintaining a high offensive tempo include using multiple routes, dispersion, highly mobile forces, piecemeal destruction of isolated enemy forces, scheduled rotation and relief of forces before they culminate, and the wise use of terrain. The exact techniques employed in a specific situation must address the mission variables. Units can overwhelm an enemy force by seizing and retaining key and decisive terrain early. Key terrain is an identifiable characteristic whose seizure or retention affords a marked advantage to either combatant, ADP-3-90. When present, decisive terrain is key terrain whose seizure and retention is mandatory for successful mission accomplishment, ADP-3-90. If decisive terrain is present, commanders designate it to communicate its importance to their concept of operations. A friendly force must control decisive terrain to accomplish its mission. See ADP-3-90 and ATP-2-01.3 for more information on key terrain. Intelligence warfighting function. units use available information collection assets to study the terrain and confirm or deny the enemy forces' strengths, dispositions, and likely intentions, especially where and in what strength the enemy force defends. Indications of the location and composition of obstacles and the positioning of engineer assets may be key in determining where and when an enemy force defends. These assets also gather information concerning the civilian population within an assigned area to confirm or deny their numbers, locations, and likely intentions, especially with regard to staying in shelters or fleeing from combat operations. By studying the terrain, units try to determine the principal mounted and dismounted avenues of approach to their objectives. They also try to determine the most advantageous areas for the enemy's main defense, routes that enemy forces may use to conduct counterattacks, and other factors such as observation and fields of fire, avenues of approach, key terrain, obstacles, and cover and concealment, known as OACOC. Attacking units continuously conduct information collection, reconnaissance, surveillance, intelligence operations, and security operations during their offensive actions because it is unlikely that they have complete knowledge of the enemy forces' intentions and actions. Commanders' critical information requirements in the offense commonly include 3 to 5 focuses such as locations, composition, equipment, strengths, and weaknesses of the enemy force to include high-value targets and enemy reconnaissance and surveillance capabilities, location of unmanned aircraft system ground control stations and launch and recovery sites, probable locations of enemy reconnaissance objectives, locations of possible enemy assembly areas, locations of enemy indirect fire weapon systems and units, locations of gaps, assailable flanks, and other enemy weaknesses, locations of areas for friendly and enemy air assault and parachute assault operations, locations of enemy air defense gun and missile units and air defense radars, locations of enemy electromagnetic warfare units, effects of weather and terrain on current and projected operations, information related to areas, structures, capabilities, organizations, people, and events, known as ASCOPE, about civilians located within the unit's assigned area, likely withdrawal routes for enemy forces, anticipated timetable schedules for the enemy forces' most likely course of action and other probable courses of action, locations of enemy command and control and intelligence nodes, reconnaissance and surveillance systems, and the frequencies used by the information systems linking these systems, locations of enemy sustainment assets, location of reserves, reserves movement routes, indications of enemy main effort, and indicators driving friendly force commanders' decisions. If friendly information collection assets cannot answer the commander's information requirements, units can commit additional internal resources, decide to execute the offense with the current information, or request additional information collection support from information to higher echelon and adjacent units. The intelligence preparation of the battlefield process assists the units in the offense with identification of key terrain features and man-made and natural obstacles, trafficability and cross-country mobility analysis, line-of-sight overlays, situation templates. Fires warfighting function. The coordinated use of indirect fires and joint fires enable units to gain and maintain fire superiority throughout all offensive actions. Units use various methods and assets to achieve the desired effects on targeted enemy forces and thereby enable friendly maneuver. This includes Army indirect systems and joint fires. Army fire support. Indirect fire assets provide units with options for gaining and maintaining fire superiority. Fire superiority are the dominating fires of one force over another force that permits that force to maneuver at a given time and place without prohibitive interference by the other. They use long-range artillery systems, both cannon and rocket, along with rotary and fixed-wing aircraft to engage enemy forces throughout the depth of the enemy's positions. Fire support planning is the continuing process of analyzing, allocating, and scheduling fires. It determines how fires are used, what types of targets to attack, what collection assets units use to acquire and track those targets, what assets they use to attack targets, and what assets verify effects on these targets. This planning does not stop at the objective or the limit of advance. Units give attention to flanks and potential enemy hide positions. Coordination among echelon fire cells and the proper use of fire support coordination measures are critical to prevent fratricide. Units plan to employ available fires to delay or neutralize repositioning enemy forces to include enemy reserves. They also use fires to suppress, neutralize, or destroy those enemy forces and systems that can most affect their unit's closure on their objectives. Units establish triggers for the initiation, shifting, and lifting of fires based on the mission variables. The fire support coordinator, known as FISCORD, or chief of fires, depending on the echelon, integrates fires into the unit's scheme of maneuver. Fire support coordinators plan the appropriate fire support for their unit. These fires can be time or event driven. The fire support coordinator plans fires on known and likely enemy positions, which may include templated enemy positions. Successful massing of indirect fires and fixed wing attacks requires a fire cell that can proficiently track friendly indirect fire asset positions and movements, and that knows the various systems' effective fire ranges. It also requires a tactical air control party proficient in the timely execution of close air support. Units must weigh the probable effects of preparation fires against achieving a greater degree of surprise against enemy forces. Friendly fires always run the risk of receiving counterfires. Units balance this risk with the requirements of the mission to determine whether to employ preparation fires. They may decide to employ terminally guided munitions to destroy select high-payoff targets, or use these munitions in mass against part of the enemy defense to facilitate a breach and negate the requirement for long-duration preparation fires by using area fire munitions. Units may choose to make an initial assault without using preparation fires to achieve tactical surprise. However, they always plan fires to support their unit's operations so that they are available if needed. Preparation fires are normally high-volume fires delivered over a short period to maximize surprise and shock effect. These preparation fires also include the conduct of electromagnetic warfare and cyber operations. Preparation fires can continue while ground maneuver elements are moving. This consideration applies to the conduct of all offensive operations. Artillery and mortars must occupy positions that are well forward and still within supporting range of the flanks of maneuver forces to provide responsive indirect fires. Units consider the effect that movement by echelon or battery has on the amount of fire support available. They should support the unit's main effort with priority of fires. If the operation contains phases, the main effort generally has priority of fires. Units place coordinated fire lines, CFLs, as close as possible to friendly maneuver forces and plan on-order CFLs on phase lines so that those CFLs can quickly shift as their forces advance. This allows the rapid engagement of targets beyond the CFL by the maximum number of available systems. Units establish critical friendly zones to protect critical actions such as support by fire positions and breaching efforts. Linking Army Forward Observers, Joint Fires Observers, and Target Acquisition Assets to Quick Fire or Exclusive Networks also provides responsive fires. Responsive fire networks allow the lead observers to communicate directly with specific field artillery or mortar fire units. These kinds of communication arrangements enhance responsiveness through streamlined network structures and focused priorities. Communications planning should also include the need for communications networks for the clearing of targets for rotary and fixed-wing attacks. Units employ information capabilities to support the offense. As friendly forces move through the enemy forces' disruption zone and close into the enemy's main battle zone, electromagnetic warfare jamming resources concentrate on neutralizing enemy fire control, target acquisition, unmanned systems control nodes, and information collection systems. They use military deception to prevent the enemy force from determining the location and objective of the friendly main effort. In addition, intelligence sensors continue to provide combat information and guidance to both friendly jammers and lethal indirect fire weapon systems, so attacking units can destroy enemy command and control nodes, reconnaissance and surveillance assets, artillery, and other high-payoff targets. Units synchronize the timing and conduct of these offensive actions so they achieve maximum effectiveness. Joint fires. Joint fires assist ground forces in shaping operations. Joint fires are fires delivered during the employment of forces from two or more components in coordinated action to produce desired effects in support of a common objective, JP3O. The principles in the application of joint fires are generally the same between offensive, defensive, and enabling operations. Joint surface-to-surface fires include Army indirect fire, cyber, and electromagnetic warfare assets tasked with supporting Air Force, Navy, or Marine Corps operations. Navy missile and naval gunfire, cyber, and electromagnetic warfare assets supporting Army units. Marine Corps indirect fire assets supporting Army units. Joint air-to-surface fires include Army rotary wing or UAS supporting Air Force, Navy, or Marine Corps operations. Navy and Air Force fixed wing and electromagnetic warfare assets. Marine Corps fixed or rotary wing or UAS supporting Army units. See JP3-09, ADP3-19, FM3-09, and ATP3-09.32/MCRP3-31.6/NTTP3-09.2/AFTTP3-2.6 for information on joint fires. Sustainment warfighting function. Offensive operations will require more reinforcements, fuel, medical, equipment, and materiel compared to defensive and enabling operations. Also, offensive operations increase the likelihood of generating mass casualties and replacing personnel and equipment. Offensive operations require greater precision in sustainment and will be executed at a higher operating tempo than other types of operations. This requires a flexible and adaptable sustainment structure to meet the demands of offensive operations. In the offense, the sustainment focus is on logistics and health service support. Proper echeloning of logistics and medical assets are key to maintaining tempo and minimizing risk in offensive operations. Logistics. Logistic units and material remain close to the maneuver force to ensure short turnaround time for supplies and services. This includes uploading as much critical materiel, such as ammunition and petroleum oils and lubricants, as possible, and coordinating to preclude attempted occupation of a logistics release point by more than one unit at a time. This allows units to reduce risk by lowering their physical and electronic signature during resupply operations. Units make decisions regarding the risk of enemy detection of logistics preparations for an attack. Responsive sustainment of the offense begins during mission analysis and continues throughout the operation, based on the expertise of the planners and the preparation and agility of the sustainment units during execution, as the potential for supplies to not be available increases as the operation progresses. Logisticians must assist with the development of feasible courses of action during planning and anticipate changes of requirements during execution. They must consider alternative routes and different means to accomplish the timely delivery of the required support, and they must provide their leaders with options to overcome whatever obstacles appear. The laws of physics constrain the art of the possible, but ingenuity and innovation can deliver solutions to problems that appear insurmountable. The variety and complexity of offensive actions requires that units establish flexible and tailorable transportation systems. There may be a wide dispersion of forces and lengthening of lines of communication. Required capabilities include movement control, terminal operations, and mode operations. Units need to closely monitor emerging resupply and rearm requirements in conjunction with ongoing operations. The prioritization of the requirements must be thought out and appropriate for the units with follow-on missions, rather than units that are most depleted in conjunction with the potential shift in mission priorities as the operation progresses. Health service support. The burden on medical resources increases due to the intensity of offensive actions and the increased distances over which support is required as a force advances. The unit reallocates medical resources as the tactical situation changes. Medical units can anticipate large numbers of casualties in a short period due to destructive capabilities of modern conventional weapons and the employment of weapons of mass destruction. These mass casualty situations can exceed the capabilities of organic and direct support medical assets to treat the numbers of casualties sustained. To prevent this from occurring, planners anticipate this possibility and coordinate with area support medical units to help absorb a rise in battlefield injuries. Careful planning and coordination avoid compromising the standard of medical care for injured soldiers. Effective management of mass casualty situations depends on established and rehearsed mass casualty plans and detailed medical planning. Units consider several other variables that ensure the success of mass casualty response plans. These include, but are not limited to, the coordination and synchronization of additional medical support or augmentation, such as medical evacuation support, forward resuscitative surgical intervention provided by forward resuscitative and surgical detachments, combat support and field hospitals, casualty collection points, ambulance exchange points, and established Class 8 resupply. Quick location and evacuation of injured personnel from the battlefield. Providing effective tactical combat casualty care and emergency medical treatment for injured personnel. Continuous flow of casualties to medical treatment facilities at the next higher role of care. Use of casualty evacuation assets when the number of casualties overwhelms the capacity of the medical evacuation system. Accurate triage and rapid medical evacuation of injured personnel to medical treatment facilities at the next higher role of care. Planning of medevac routes, ground and air, along with contingencies during times of hazardous trafficability. Medevac capacity is rarely sufficient, and units must designate casualty evacuation capability within their formations. Protection warfighting function. Protection prevents or mitigates detection, threat effects, and hazards to preserve combat power and enable freedom of action. To help preserve the force, units ensure they address all protection tasks during the unit's planning, preparation, and execution, while also constantly assessing the effectiveness of those protection tasks. In the offense, protection is applied carefully and selectively to ensure that it does not hinder a unit's freedom of action. This is accomplished through protection integration and synchronization where and when significant threats and hazards are projected in the offensive plan. The fluidity and rapid tempo of the offense poses challenges when protecting friendly assets to deny enemy forces the ability to interfere with friendly force operations. Protection is a key consideration at every echelon, and all military activities have some inherent or organic protection capability, such as survivability, anti-terrorism measures, local security. Higher echelons employ protection systems to enable lower echelon maneuver and deny enemy forces the ability to interfere with subordinate forces' ongoing operations. Lower echelons use reconnaissance and security forces to protect forward maneuver forces and exposed flanks. At the lowest tactical levels, units use deception, cover, concealment, and dispersion to counter threat capabilities and preserve critical capabilities, assets, and activities. See ADP 3-37 for information on protection tasks. Air and missile defense. A ground force's primary air defense systems are its organic weapons to defend against short-range air threats, supported by joint fighter aircraft conducting offensive and defensive counter-air operations. The joint force may not have air superiority or even air parity. Units weigh the air threat with their ability to mitigate the threat when considering options for offensive operations. During offensive actions, units direct the positioning of available organic or supporting radars in those locations where they can best initially support the unit's attack. The selection of those positions reflects a risk assessment designed to preclude their early loss to enemy action. The Air Defense Airspace Management, known as ATOM cell in the Echelon staff, communicates with the appropriate Air and Missile Defense, AMD, command post. That AMD command post provides additional information to the supported unit to expand the fidelity of the air picture, including information on engaged air threats by the Joint Force Air Component Unit, Army Patriot Air Defense Systems, and short-range air defense. The attacking unit concentrates on conducting passive protection measures during its offensive actions. If attacked by enemy aerial systems in assembly areas, attack positions, or while moving, the unit disperses and conducts small arms air defense. Units at each echelon establish air defense priorities based on the concept of operations, scheme of maneuver, air situation, and air defense priorities established by higher headquarters. If units have Army air defense systems supporting their attack, they generally weight that coverage toward their main efforts and establish protective corridors over terrain traversed by subordinate units conducting that operation. Command of all air defense assets requires complete and timely communications to ensure proper weapon status for the protection of friendly air support assets. Protection measures are an essential part of air and missile defense planning at all levels. All units conduct passive actions in conjunction with their missions. Passive actions reduce the effectiveness of the enemy air threat. Tactical air defense support focuses on enemy UAS, enemy rotary wing aircraft, enemy fixed wing aircraft. Survivability. All units have an inherent responsibility to improve their positions and take proactive measures to protect their forces, whether they are in an assembly area or maneuvering. Survivability operations consist of three areas designed to focus efforts on mitigating friendly losses to hostile actions or environments, providing or improving cover, concealment, and camouflage. Units normally consider the impact of constructing protective emplacements for artillery and sustainment concentrations as part of the planning process. Units do not employ protective positions in the offense as extensively as they do in the defense. Such terrain modifications may require significant amounts of time, making them impractical for protecting assets that must frequently move to keep pace with operations. However, units may require the hardening of key command and control facilities, especially those with detectable electronic signatures. Maneuver units construct hasty fighting positions as soon as possible when they halt or pause during the conduct of offensive operations. Forces conducting offensive actions continue to use camouflage, cover, concealment, survivability moves, maximum existing terrain, obscuration, and deception. Explosive ordnance disposal. Explosive ordnance disposal units assess and render safe hazards to protect the force. These elements can dispose of all explosive hazards to include foreign or United States ammunition, unexploded ordnance, mines, and Seaburn munitions. Engineers identify, breach, and clear minefields. Explosive ordnance disposal forces render safe explosive hazards that restrict unit freedom of movement or deny access to or threaten critical assets or operations. See ATP 4-32 for more information on explosive ordnance disposal operations. Coordinate air and missile defense. Air and missile defense assets during an offensive operation can provide vital protection from air threats and contribute to the freedom of maneuver by friendly forces. Units coordinate and synchronize air and missile defense assets for coverage over maneuver forces and their critical assets, to include denying surveillance by threat aerial platforms. Air and missile defense assets also protect forward-based infrastructure, such as lines of communications and command nodes, from aerial attack, determine and predict reporting ballistic missile launch points and impact points, and provide early warning and surveillance. Unit protection cell planners coordinate with the unit Air and Defense Airspace Management Cell, or AMD, to protect the unit's prioritized protection list, ensuring the protection of critical assets and forces from enemy air attack, missile attack, and surveillance. AMD assets integrate protective systems by using the six employment guidelines: mutual support, overlapping fires, balanced fires, weighted coverage, early engagement, and defense in depth, and additional considerations necessary to mass and mix AMD capabilities. These employment guidelines enable air defense artillery forces to successfully accomplish combat missions and support overall force objectives. Risk management. The likelihood of fratricide increases during offensive operations compared to defensive operations. During offensive operations, friendly forces maneuver towards enemy forces while another friendly force gains fire superiority. The convergence of friendly forces at the decisive point is the riskiest part of any offensive operation. During offensive operations, various briefs and rehearsals are the primary tools for reducing risk identified during planning and preparation. The types of risks identified assist in determining the type of rehearsal conducted. Rehearsals should extend to all levels of command and involve all key players. Risk management considerations during offensive operations include confirmation briefs to ensure leaders understand their assigned mission and key tasks, back briefs to ensure subordinates' course of actions meets their higher echelon's commander's intent, rehearsals to ensure shared understanding between units and refine applicable control measures to synchronize operations. The following factors may reveal risks during rehearsals. Types of rehearsals, such as combined arms or fires rehearsals, training and proficiency levels of units and individuals, the habitual relationships between units conducting the offensive operation, the physical readiness of the troops conducting the offensive operation. Area security. Area security operations typically support offensive operations by ensuring the continual conduct of sustainment operations that generate and maintain combat power to maintain tempo and extend operational reach. Additionally, area security operations allow units to provide protection to critical assets without a significant diversion of combat power. During the offense, various military organizations may be involved in conducting area security operations in an economy of force role to protect lines of communications, convoys, or critical fixed sites and radars. Bases and base camps employ local security measures, including explosive ordnance disposal, assessments and recommendations, random anti-terrorism measures, and increased force protection conditions, but may be vulnerable to enemy or adversary remnant forces requiring a response that is beyond base camp capabilities. In support areas, units conduct area damage control to prevent and respond to the negative effects of enemy or adversary action that can diminish combat power. Transitions. Units transition from offensive operations only when they result in complete victory and the end of hostilities, reach a culminating point, or receive a change in mission from a higher unit. Generally, units in the offense transition to the defense or stability. All offensive actions that do not achieve complete victory reach a culminating point for a variety of reasons, such as when initiative shifts from the attacking force to the enemy, friendly forces encounter heavily defended areas that they cannot bypass, fuel, ammunition, and other supplies fail to keep up with expenditures, soldiers become physically exhausted, casualties and equipment losses become too much for an organization to handle, repairs and replacements do not keep pace with damage and losses, reserves or follow-on forces are not available to continue the advance, enemy reinforcements attack or the defender counterattacks with fresh troops. Several of these causes may combine to halt an offense. In some cases, the unit can regain its momentum, but this only happens after difficult fighting or an operational pause. Transitions do not just occur between offense, defense, and stability operations. During offensive operations, it may be necessary or planned for units to execute a short halt to operations without necessarily executing a transition. An example would be a unit executing a short halt in an assault position prior to maneuvering during an attack. The halt or tactical pause should be as brief as possible to ensure the unit does not lose momentum. Units plan a pause to replenish combat power and phase their operations accordingly before subordinate forces reach their culminating points. Simultaneously, units attempt to prevent enemy forces from knowing when friendly forces become overextended. Transition to defensive operations. Once offensive actions begin, the attacking unit tries to sense when subordinates reach or are about to reach their culminating points. Before they reach them, units transition to a focus on defensive operations. They have more freedom to choose where and when to halt an attack if they sense that subordinate forces are approaching culmination. Units plan future activities to aid the defense, minimize vulnerability to attack, and facilitate renewal of the offense as the force transitions to branches or sequels of ongoing operations. For example, to prevent overburdening the extended locks that units should manage when and how they begin to transition to prevent a lock bottleneck. Units anticipate the ending of unit offensive actions by preparing branches and sequels and transmitting them to subordinates via orders. These orders include the time or circumstances under which the current offense transitions to a defensive operation, the missions and locations of subordinate units, and control measures. As units transition from an offensive focus to a defensive focus, they maintain contact and surveillance of enemy forces by combining reconnaissance units and surveillance assets to develop the information required to plan future actions. Establish a security area and local security measures. Position artillery assets to ensure the support of security forces. Position forces for probable future employment. Maintain or regain contact with adjacent friendly units in a contiguous assigned area and ensure that units remain capable of mutual support in a non-contiguous assigned area. Transition engineer effort by shifting emphasis from mobility to countermobility and survivability. Consolidate and reorganize. Explain the rationale for transitioning from the offense to their soldiers. Emplace protective obstacles. Resupply with fuel and ammunition. Occupy defensible terrain. Units reorganize and resupply during transitions. This requires a transition in the sustainment effort with a shift in emphasis from ensuring the force's ability to move forward to ensuring the force's ability to defend on its chosen location by increasing forward stocks of construction, barrier, and obstacle material and ammunition. A transition is often a time when units can perform equipment maintenance. Additional assets may also be available for casualty evacuation and medical treatment because of a reduced tempo of operations. Units should not wait too long to transition from the offense to the defense as subordinate forces approach their culminating points. Without prior planning, transitioning to defensive actions after reaching a culminating point is extremely difficult. There are several reasons for this. Defensive preparations are hasty and forces are not adequately disposed for the defense. Defensive reorganization requires more time than an enemy force may allow. Usually, attacking forces approaching culmination find themselves dispersed across the width and depth of their assigned areas with reduced combat power. The shift to the defense requires a psychological adjustment. Soldiers who have become accustomed to advancing must now halt and operate defensively on new and often unfavorable terms. Units can use two techniques when transitioning to a defensive operation. The first technique is for the leading elements to commit forces and push forward to claim enough ground to establish a security area anchored on defensible terrain. A security area is that area occupied by a unit's security elements and includes the areas of influence of those security elements, ADP 3-90. The main force moves forward or rearward as necessary to occupy key terrain and institutes a hasty defense that progresses into a deliberate defense as time and resources allow. The second technique is to establish a security area generally along the unit's final positions, moving the main body rearward to defensible terrain. The security force thins out and the remaining force deploys to organize the defense. In both methods, the unit keeps the security area with the appropriate depth to enable dispersion and minimize early threat acquisition of friendly positions. In the first technique, the security area often lacks depth because the force lacks sufficient combat power to seize required terrain. In the second technique, enemy forces may accurately template the forward trace of friendly units and engage with artillery and other fire support systems. These actions often result in the loss of additional friendly soldiers and equipment and expend more resources. If units determine the necessity of terminating an offense and conducting a retrograde, typically subordinate units initially conduct an area defense from their current locations. This lasts until their units can synchronize their activities to conduct retrograde operations. The amount of effort expended in establishing an area defense depends on the mission variables. Transition to stability. The end of focused offensive operations may not be the decisive act. The successful performance of stability tasks may be the main effort in a major operation or campaign. Units and staffs plan the transition to focus on the conduct of stability tasks from the conduct of offensive operations. To assist in this transition to stability-focused operations, units continuously consolidate gains. Units consider activities necessary to consolidate gains while seeking to achieve their end state. It is the final exploitation of tactical success.